The news is a shit show these days, and we're here to give you a break from the white supremacist media bullshit by bringing you the shitty news so that you can feel less like shit because you know the people discussing all the fucked up shit give a shit about you and the shitty situations you deal with every day. So shit. Pour yourself a glass and settle in for Father Teresa's Wine Cellar.
Hey fam, it is Phoenix Kalita here in the Wine Cellar. Thank you for hanging out with me. I am back on the international news bit, so let's get into some international news. I'm not going to play a show opener or a trigger warning because I'm fucking boring, because the soundboard is far away, because I don't know what the audio is doing. I'm just going to make up any excuse I can to not have to play, to have to open up the soundboard and figure stuff out. But yeah, you know, this is just a short little program. Gonna keep it simple, gonna keep it easy, maybe 10, 15 minutes. And it's the Wine Cellar, so expect absolutely everything you would expect from the Wine Cellar. Just because this is international news doesn't mean it's less graphic, violent, triggering, upsetting, depressing, full of people just being total fucking assholes than our regular content, right? So let's kick it off with Afghanistan, although technically this is a U.S. story. But it's about our foreign policy. Yay, American foreign policy. We're number one in killing people. So the UN has said that Afghan civilians killed in 2019 by Afghan, U.S. and allied forces. Let me start that over again. UN says more Afghan civilians killed in 2019 by Afghan, U.S. and allied forces than by terror groups. Wow, I don't understand why there's more and more terrorists. Maybe it's because we start off killing civilians and the survivors get pissed off. So, Kabul, Afghanistan. More civilians were killed by Afghan and international coalition forces in Afghanistan than by the Taliban or other militants in the first half of 2019, the UN mission said in a report released Tuesday. The report apparently refers to civilians killed during the Afghan and U.S. military operations against insurgents, such as airstrikes and night raids on militant hideouts. Insurgents often hide among civilians. The U.S. formally ended its combat mission in Afghanistan in 2014, yet we're still fucking there, but still provides extensive air and other support to local forces battling militants. You know, I'm just going to throw this out there. If we stop doing drone strikes and airstrikes that stopped killing people who are not affiliated with terrorist groups, we might see a decline of people willing to join terrorist groups. I'm just throwing it out there. Same thing with our crisis at the border. If we stop fucking around with other people's governments and destabilizing them, we might not have such a refugee issue. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here, people. So the report by the UN in Afghanistan said 403 civilians were killed by Afghan forces in the first 6 months of the year, and another 314 by international forces, a total of 717. That's compared to the 531 killed by the Taliban, an Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS, affiliate and other militants during the same period. So we're killing 200 people more every 6 months than the Taliban is. Awesome. It said those 300 killed by militants were directly targeted. Oh, okay. The Taliban have been carrying out near daily attacks, mainly targeting security forces. so you know how when you're like on a news website and they, you know, like you're reading the article and then they like stick in like little like hyperlinks, like you might also be interested in. The hyperlink here is Trump asked to explain claim he could end Afghan war in 10 days. Yeah. That would be nice. There was no immediate comment from the Kabul government or the Afghan military on the UN report. NATO said that the alliance is not complacent and shares UN concerns over Afghan civilian casualties, stressing the best way to end suffering of civilians is to focus on political settlement of the conflict and continue efforts to reduce violence. Yeah. I mean, that seems fucking logical. Danielle Riggio, press officer at the alliance headquarters in Brussels, said, quote, "Our forces on the ground continue to respect the highest operational standards, unless you're killing civilians. We thoroughly investigate every allegation of civilian casualties." No, you fucking don't. "And we train the Afghan security forces to ensure that they take the utmost caution in order not to harm civilians." That's a bunch of bullshit. The Taliban have rejected calls for a ceasefire as they hold talks with the United States aimed at ending the 18-year war. You know, I pointed this out that we've now reached a point where, like, if you were pregnant or your partner was pregnant and you went away to the war, your kid is now old enough to enlist with you and y'all can do a tour together. Like, yeah, that's kind of wild. 18 years. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Parties to the conflict may give differing explanations for recent trends, each designed to justify their own military tactics, said Richard Bennett, the human rights chief of the UN assistance mission in Afghanistan, which released the report. The situation for ordinary Afghans would be improved not just by abiding by international humanitarian law, but also by reducing the intensity of fighting. Which is, like, fucking wild to me, right? Because they always say that, and it's just like, how... Okay, so what did he say? Abiding by international humanitarian law. So if it's a law and countries aren't abiding by it, why are there not fucking consequences? What's the point of having a law if people don't have to follow it, or countries don't have to follow it, or governments don't have to follow it? Like, what's the fucking point? That just is always weird to me, because I always see that, like, framing or language in articles like this, where they're like, well, international law says, and it's like, but we're doing it anyway, so what are the consequences for breaking this international law? Excuse me, y'all. So, the report said civilian deaths and injuries were down by a quarter from January to June 2019, compared with the same time last year when casualties were at an all-time high. Civilian casualties attributed to insurgents dropped by 43%. Meanwhile, a Taliban statement on Tuesday praised the killing of two U.S. service members the previous day in the southern Kandahar province. I mean... yeah, y'all are at war. Of course they're going to... like, why did they even add that in? Was this, like, some American... because this is on CBS. Was this some, like, pro-American propaganda? Like, of course the Taliban's going to celebrate when American soldiers die. They're at war with them. So a man dressed as an Afghan soldier shot the Americans and was wounded and then taken into custody. U.S. defense officials told CBS News senior national security correspondent David Martin that it appears the shooter was an infiltrator, not an active member of the Afghan Defense Forces. The Taliban called the shooter a hero. Yeah. Okay. Oh, okay. You know what? Fuck the rest of this article. It's just straight up fucking pro-America propaganda about how bad the Taliban is. Like, I like how they end it with how bad the Taliban is, but start it with saying, by the way, we kill more people than the Taliban, more civilians than the Taliban. But okay, we wonder how the Taliban gets people to join. How do they recruit people? Oh, right, because we're killing their family members. Yeah. Fucking America. Fuck yeah. Best foreign policy ever. You know, I hate when I'm recording and I'm recording by myself, so I have to, like, pause. It, like, messes up my whole flow. But yeah, I was about to say moving to Brazil, but then the page wouldn't load, so I had to, like, go back and close it and try to, you know, open it again and still wouldn't load and try to refresh it, but I just don't want all that dead air, so I'm like, oh shit, let me just fucking pause it. Alright. So, Brazil. There was a prison riot that, this is fucking wild, y'all, left 57 dead, 16 decapitated in settling of accounts between rival gangs. That is a rowdy fucking prison riot, people. So, Rio de Janeiro, at least 57 prisoners were killed by other inmates during clashes between organized crime groups in the Altamira prison in northern Brazil on Monday. 16 of the victims were decapitated, according to prison officials. How fucking mad you'd be to gotta cut somebody's head off? And they're in prison. What? Do they just have, like, access to machetes and axes and shit in prison? What the fuck? All right. Let's find out what the fuck happened. Paris State Prison authorities said in a fight that erupted around 7 a.m. between the Rio de Janeiro-based Comando Vermelho, a local crime group known as Comando Classe A. Leaders of the Comando Classe A set fire to a cell belonging to one of the prison's pavilions where members of the Comando Vermelho were located. Holy shit. State Prison's Chief Yarbas Vasconcelos said that the fire spread rapidly with inmates held in old container units that had been adapted for the prison while another building is under construction. The fire prevented police forces from entering the building for several hours, he told a news conference. And someone snapped a picture. These niggas is like, they've got on their, they're like masked up and they have homemade knives. All right. Okay. Two prison staff members were held hostage but eventually released. Vasconcelos said it was a targeted attack. The aim was to show that it was a settling of accounts between the two groups, not a protest or a rebellion against the prison system. Which is also like, imagine what they could have done if they'd worked together to protest the prison system instead of settling accounts between each other. But okay. Authorities have not found any firearms following the riot, only makeshift knives. Prison authorities said 46 inmates will be transferred to other prisons, 10 of which will go to stricter federal facilities. President Bolsonaro, who was elected on the promise of curbing widespread violence in Brazil, including the country's often overcrowded, out-of-control prisons. Yeah? Okay. They just put that sentence in there. Yeah, but so what is he going to do about it? The Associated Press obtained a July 2019 report from the National Justice Council that says it was filed by a local judge in charge of the facility, showing the prison had 343 detainees, but was intended to house a maximum of 163. Wow. Okay. Vasconcelos said the situation did not meet the official requirements to be considered overcrowded. What the fuck? Wait. It's meant for 163 people, but there's 343 in there. That's like fucking double. What the shit? Alright. Yet Vasconcelos said the situation did not meet the official requirements to be considered overcrowded. It is not a unit that has prison overcrowding. We consider overcrowding when it exceeds 210%. Damn. The judge who filed the report described the overall state of the prison in the city of Altamira as terrible. In many of Brazil's prisons, badly outnumbered guards struggle to retain power over an ever-growing population of inmates who are able to run criminal activities from behind bars. The killings echoed of those 55 inmates who died in a series of riots in May in several prisons in the neighboring state of Amazonas. In early 2017, more than 120 inmates died across prisons in northern states when rival gangs clashed over control of drug trafficking routes in the region. Wow. The violence lasted several weeks, spreading to various states. Wait, so are they drug trafficking from prison? Because why are inmates dying if they're clashing over drug trafficking routes? Like, they're running that... Alright, apparently they're running that shit from prison. Okay. Mm-hmm. State authorities spent the afternoon in Altamira drafting a security plan to avoid possible retaliations in the region. Police forces from the nearby municipality of Santarém were sent as reinforcement in the coming weeks. Prison authorities said that they had not received any prior intelligence reports of an upcoming attack. The prison is run directly by the state, not a third-party private operator, as in the Manaus prison where the riots took place in May. Last year, inmates had already set fire to another wing inside the same prison unit, according to the state prosecutor's office. Okay. Well, I mean, prisons are awesome, though, because we get the results we want by putting people in prison. Obviously. Obviously. Holy shit. Alright, I have another story. Oh, great, we're doing the loading thing again. Ready for the pause. And this is like, I don't know how newsworthy this is necessarily, but this is more just interesting to me, so I want to cover it. Princess Haya, who is married to the ruler of Dubai, United Arab Emirates, has fled to London and is filing for, like, orders of protection, which is interesting to me. So, the estranged wife of the ruler of Dubai, one of the most high-profile leaders in the Middle East, has asked for a forced marriage protection order in a UK court. Sheikh Mohammed Al Maktoum's wife, Princess Haya Bint Al Hussein, is the third female member of his court to apparently try to run away. So, like, what the fuck is going on that they're running away? Like, I just want to know. And we may never know because, you know, powerful people don't like to tell their secrets, but I would just like to know. This month, she was reported to be hiding in London and said to be in fear for her life. The case began in London on Tuesday. Princess Haya asked for wardship of her children, with whom she left the United Arab Emirates with, as well as a forced marriage protection order and a non-molestation order. I'm going to assume that means a don't fucking bother me order and not a don't inappropriately sexually touch me order. I think that Americans are the ones who use molest as, like, a sexual touching. And I think other places consider it a, like, annoyance, bother me, irritate me type shit. So the details of the orders are not yet known. Sheikh Mohammed, meanwhile, applied for return of his children to Dubai and applied for the court to impose reporting restrictions on details about the order, which a request was rejected by the judge. Sir Andrew McFarlane ruled that, quote, there was a public interest in the public understanding in very broad terms and proceedings before the court. So who is Princess Haya? The princess, who was born in Jordan and educated at private schools in Britain, is an Olympic equestrian and the half-sister of the current Jordanian ruler, King Abdullah II. She married Sheikh Mohammed in 2004, becoming his sixth and, quote-unquote, junior wife. The 70-year-old Sheikh, is the billionaire owner of Godolphin Horse Racing Stables, and reportedly has 23 children by different wives. All right. Actually, you know what? That makes sense, because if every wife has four kids, that would have been 24 kids. So, yeah. Princess Haya, who was 45, initially fled to Germany to try to seek asylum there, but it... You know what? Wait, hold on. They got married when? 2004? Okay, so she was an adult then. All right. So it emerged, she was initially said to be in Germany trying to seek asylum, but it emerged this month that she was living in central London, specifically in a $107 million townhouse in Kensington Palace Gardens. $107 fucking million. It's believed Princess Haya will want to stay in the UK. However, if her husband demands her return to Dubai, this could cause a diplomatic headache for Britain, which has close ties to the United Arab Emirates. After she fled, Sheikh Mohammed wrote an angry poem accusing an unnamed woman of betrayal and treachery and posted it on his Instagram page. This 70-year-old ass nigga got a fucking Instagram. You know what? Donald Trump has a Twitter. The fuck, man. Sources close to the princess say earlier this month she recently discovered disturbing facts about the mysterious return of Sheikha Latifa to Dubai, and Sheikha Latifa is one of Sheikh Mohammed's daughters. Sheikha Latifa had escaped the UAE by sea with the help of a Frenchman, but was intercepted by armed men off the coast of India and returned to Dubai. At the time, Princess Haya defended Dubai's reputation over the incident, claiming that Sheikha Latifa had been, quote, vulnerable to exploitation and was now safe back in Dubai. Human rights advocates said she was abducted against her will. Yeah. Later, however, sources allege that Princess Haya had become aware of new information related to the case and as a result was under pressure from her husband's extended family. In July 2000, another of Sheikh Mohammed's daughters, Sheikha Samsa Al Maktoum, who was 19 at the time, briefly escaped from the family's Surrey home. Her method of escaping was driving their Land Rover to the edge of the estate, abandoning the car, slipping through the fence on foot, made headlines at the time. She was apparently found in Cambridge a year later and forcibly returned to Dubai. So, I mean, this is, I don't know, maybe this is my version of, like, international royalty gossip, but I would just like to know what the fuck is going on in that family that all the women keep trying to run away. I have questions. Lots and lots of questions that may never be answered, but, you know, I just want to keep my eyes on this and see what's actually going on. And I'm going to end this on good news. I swear it's actually good news, y'all. India, the tiger population has raised to nearly 3,000, making the country one of the safest habitats for the endangered animals. Prime Minister Narendra Modi released the tiger count for 2018 on Monday and said it's a historic achievement for India, whose big cat population had dwindled to about 1,400 cats approximately 15 years ago. India estimates its tiger population for every 4 years. Environmental Minister, okay, I'm going to nail the name, y'all. I'm going to fucking nail it. Prakash Javadekar said that the tiger population was 2,226 at the last count in 2014. The tiger is India's national animal and is categorized as an endangered animal under the Wildlife Protection Act. The human conflict with tigers has gradually increased since the 1970s, when India started a conservation program that carved out sanctuaries and national parks and made it a crime to kill them. With around 3,000 tigers... Oh, please don't give me ads right now. I don't want them. With about 3,000 tigers, India has emerged as one of the biggest and safest habitats for them in the world, Modi said, praising all the stakeholders involved in the country's tiger conservation exercise. 9 years ago, it was decided in St. Petersburg, Russia, that the target of doubling the tiger population would be 2022. We in India have completed this target 4 years in advance. He also said that the number of protected areas in the country rose to 860 last year from 692 in 2014. Similarly, the number of community reserves has gone up from 100 from 43 in 2014. Belinda Wright, founder of the Wildlife Protection Society of India, based in New Delhi, said that India should be proud of its conservation achievement, as the latest study was a much larger and more thorough estimation of the tiger population than has previously been done before. But she cautioned we still have a long way to go to secure a long-term future for wild tigers. She added that the human-tiger conflict was one of the biggest conservation challenges because India has so many people. The conflict between wildlife confined to ever-shrinking forests and grasslands and India's human population is deadly. Government data shows that about one person is killed every day by tigers or elephants. What the fuck? Ugh. Last week, some enraged villagers chased and killed a tiger with sticks after it killed a woman working in a farm. Whoa, hold the fuck up. Yes, I know we're supposed to be feeling bad for the tigers because they're endangered, but how fucking badass does your village have to be that they killed a tiger with sticks? They killed a tiger... Sticks? Sticks. My nigga. So they killed a tiger with sticks after it killed a woman working in a farm in a northern Indian village of Kiri. The region is part of the... Pilibhit Tiger Range Forest, according, hold on, let me just start this whole fucking sentence over. The region is part of the Pilibhit Tiger Range, according to Forest Officer Vivek Tiwari. Tiwari said that police have arrested four villagers. The area is about 215 miles east of New Delhi. Wright said the government should not relax any protection measure and should avoid huge linear intrusions, including highways, railways, electric power lines, and canals through protected areas, as that leads to increased human-tiger conflict. India's elephants and tigers are some of the most hunted animals in the country, sought for ivory tusks or bones that are sold on the black market for use in unproven traditional Chinese medicine. Elephants are also threatened by moving trains. All right. So there you go. I actually ended it on good news. The tiger population in India is like kind of sort of doing okay. So there you go. All right. That's all I have for the wine cellar. Thank you for hanging out with me. Thank you for getting your most recent bit of international news. In the meantime, I am out of here. I have stuff I have to do today. I have all the laundry to do. It's going to be like so, so fun. And yeah, anyways, if you like what we do, remember you can always hit us up on Okay, my phone just completely froze up. That's awesome. You can always hit us up on patreon.com/winecellarmediafund or paypal.me/phoenixandwilliam. Please stay as safe as possible wherever you are. Do something nice for yourself. Do something nice for someone else. And yeah, that's all I got. I'm going to catch y'all tomorrow.